Bhadarayana Nirvacha.
Sri Bhadarayana Nirvacha.
Sukadeva Goswami said.
Sukadeva Goswami said.
Atta.
Thus.
And Deva Rishi.
Deva Rishi.
The great sage Narada.
The great sage Narada.
Ranjan.
Rajan.
O King.
O King.
Samparetam.
Samparetam.
Dead.
Dead.
Nirpatmajam.
Nirpatmajam.
Son of the King.
Son of the King.
Ardarsha Yatva. Making visible. Iti. Thus.
Thus.
Undi. Uvacha.
Uvacha.
Explain.
Explain.
Nyatina.
Nyatina.
To all the relatives,
Anusochitam,
who were lamenting. Translation, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Pariksit, by his mystic power, the great sage Narada brought the dead son into the vision of all the lamenting relatives and then spoke as follows. Sri Narada Muni said, oh, living entity, all good fortune unto you. Just see your father and mother. All your friends and relatives are overwhelmed with grief because of your passing away. Because you died untimely, the balance of your lifetime still remains. Therefore, you may re-enter your body and enjoy the remainder of your life surrounded by your friends and relatives. Accept the royal throne and all the opulences given by your father. Text 4. By the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? Therefore, here it is made clear that the living being enters a material body that is like a machine created by the five gross elements of material nature and the three subtle elements. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, there are two separate identities called the inferior and superior natures, which both belong to the Supreme Personality, Godhead. According to the results of a living entity's fruit of actions, he is forced to enter the material elements in different types of bodies. This time, the living entity was supposed to have been the son of Maharaj Chitrakirti and Queen Kritajyoti, because according to the laws of nature, he entered a body made by the king and queen. Actually, however, he was not their son. The living entity is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he wants to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gives him a chance to enter various bodies. The living entity has no true relationship with the material body he gets from his material mother and father. He is part parcel of the Supreme Lord, but he is allowed to go through different bodies. The body created by the so-called father and mother actually has nothing to do with so-called creators. Therefore, the living entity flatly denied that Maharaj Chitrakirti was his wife or his father and mother. Translation by the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes among the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, I wish birth for these, my mother and father. No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? So we see here that Narada Muni, by his great power, was able to revive this dead body by calling Jiva back into it. So he came alive again. And then Narada Muni said, well, you can live the rest of your life, because actually you died untimely. You should have had a longer lifespan. So you could enjoy this life as the prince, and then you can become the king, and you can enjoy with your parents and your relatives, etc. So in reply to this, the revived son speaks. Now, of course, we understand that he was actually very little when he died because he was a baby or something like that. Nevertheless, he can speak here. And he speaks something quite unexpectedly, he speaks philosophy. So he has an understanding of the nature of the material bodies and how the jiva goes from one body to another. He is quite knowledgeable of all of this. And normally we see that jivas, they come out of the womb and they grow up. They have no knowledge at all of who they are. They're very ignorant. But here we find this particular jiva is very knowledgeable of the nature of transmigrating from one body to the other. And so he begins to speak to his parents, mainly, and their relatives, in order that they give up their lamentation. Previously described, everyone was lamenting. So here this jiva attempts to stop the lamentation. Now previously we saw that Narada Muni and Angira had come and they tried to convince the king to give up his lamentation by giving him instructions about the material body. Now it looks as if that was not sufficient, because it says in the other verse here that they were still lamenting in spite of the instructions of Narada and Angira. So this is a chance, another chance given by Narada Muni's mercy for them to get some realization. So here the son himself begins speaking about the nature of material bodies, material identity, material attachment, and how actually the soul is completely different from the material body. So this is more or less, we say, a repetition of the same knowledge that the sages gave the king, but in, let's say, a more believable form, because we see the son himself is giving this knowledge. So normally we understand that once a person is dead, he cannot come back to life. But here we see that somehow or other, he was able to come back to life. That was rather miraculous. And more than that, he actually spoke. And not only spoke, but he spoke philosophy. He spoke some wise words. So it's very astonishing to the king and queen and everyone else there that this would happen. And therefore they got some instructions which they could believe. Particularly because this son is now relating his own experience of how he goes from body to body, and ultimately from the jiva's point of view, nobody is the mother and father. Nobody is the relative, because each lifetime he has mothers and fathers and relatives, etc. As long as he's a human being. And then if he's an animal, he may have mothers and fathers also. And if he's a plant, he wouldn't have a mother and father, so to speak. So the idea of mother and father and the attachment of the son to the mother and father and the mother and father's attachment to the son is a very temporary phenomena having to do with our material identities only. So as I said, this was already stated by Narada Muni and Angira previously, but here it becomes very credible because it comes out of the mouth of the son himself in a very remarkable fashion. So as I said previously, this is very basic knowledge for spiritual life. We have to understand the difference between the body and the spirit. And in order to have a person give up lamentation, one can give such an explanation that you're not actually the body, that you're eternal. And then there's some consolation because the attachments are very temporary. At the same time, as I also mentioned, this is not complete knowledge. It is only partial. So though in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna starts his day with Arjuna by telling him you're not the material body, we should not simply end with this type of knowledge. We also have to connect that soul to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, it's not complete knowledge. So this aspect of understanding or not the body will lead to detachment from the material world. So that is good from the point of view of avoiding suffering. It's also good from the point of view of liberation. So therefore, the Gyanis, as an Anga, will cultivate philosophy or vivek, developing discrimination and not the material body, and studying the Vedanta Sutras and Upanishads. And they will cultivate vairagya as an Anga of their sadhana, detached from material things, giving up material things, doing austerities, doing vratas, etc. So it becomes quite important for them to do these things. So from that point of view, yes, it is very favorable. So this knowledge is also part of jnana, the sadhana of jnana. At the same time, we should not reject that as part of bhakti. It is also included in bhakti. We also must understand that we're not the material body, that we are soul. If we think we're a material body and we're a material body is worshipping the Supreme Lord, and then we're liable to think the Supreme Lord also is a material body. And that somehow we can be eternal in our material bodies. So this is all untrue. So the very essential to bhakti also that we understand is differentiation between the body and the soul. But bhakti is different from jnana because in bhakti we put emphasis upon the relationship of the jiva with the Supreme Lord, not just the jiva is not the material body, that we're eternal, etc. But rather, that we have a relationship, we are the servant of the Supreme Lord. So that is emphasized in bhakti. So therefore, the knowledge of not being the body, being the soul is acceptable to bhakti also, but we also have to then make the next step and understand that there is a Supreme Lord and we are related with Him. So, what does this do? This gives us more complete knowledge. The knowledge of the soul is not incorrect, but if that's all the knowledge we get, this will lead us to the path of liberation, detachment from material body, destruction of all karmas. So when that happens and we don't have knowledge of the Supreme Lord, what happens? The soul is free from material energy and merges in Brahman. So in other words, by simply cultivating Atma again, then we end up impersonalists. So it's not complete knowledge in itself. At the same time, we do not reject this knowledge. So that is why, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it is very carefully explained that Brahman and Bhagavan and Paramatma are actually one entity. Advaita Jnana. They cannot really be divided up. The realization is one person actually. But he manifests as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan according to the sadhana and desires of the individual. So one person is seen in different ways. So, therefore that realization of Atman Brahman is also part of the Supreme Lord's realization, but only one part. So of course we could argue, well, which is superior? Is the Brahman superior or is the Bhagavan aspect superior? So some people will say, well, we want realization without quality, so that's superior. And we have qualities that is inferior. We can argue like that. Then, of course, the counter-argument, well, is the qualities are not inferior, they're not material qualities, so therefore there's no inferiority in having qualities. So why argue on that basis that no quality is better than quality? So the Bhagavatam, of course, our acharyas emphasize the fact that the qualities of the Lord are not material things. They arise from the Lord's sarup, which is spiritual. Part of the sarup shakti of the Lord. So therefore they're not connected with material gunas at all. And therefore they're not inferior. So therefore we can realize the Lord without his shaktis, without his qualities, without his form, without his activities. Or we can realize him with his qualities or with his activities. So which is superior? Which is complete? Obviously, the Lord with his shaktis, that is a higher realization than the Lord without his shaktis. Yeah. So, therefore, the Bhagavatam recommends that we understand the Lord with his shaktis, then he is Bhagavan. That is complete. So Brahmana is also there, but it's incomplete realization of the Lord, minus his shaktis. That does not mean the Lord is incomplete, but since our realization is incomplete. Just as the example is giving of seeing a mountain from 50 miles away. So if we only perceive like that, we get no other information. Our knowledge is not very perfect. We understand mountain is there. We don't know the height of the mountain. We don't know what's on the mountain. We don't know the chemical composition of the mountain. We don't know if it's got trees on it or not. We just know there's a thing over there in the distance 50 miles away. But it's not untrue. It's true. But it's very general knowledge. So it's not complete. So superior knowledge is to go to the mountain itself, and then we can examine it in detail. We can see the rocks, we can examine it, get the chemical composition of the rocks, we can see the trees and the plants and the animals on the mountain, we can measure the height of the mountain. That's more complete knowledge, obviously. So, similarly, but the same mountain, but it's more complete. So, similarly, realizing Bhagavan through the process of bhakti is complete realization in comparison to realizing the Lord as Brahman through jnana. Why the different realizations? One is desire. If you don't desire to understand the qualities of God, then God does not reveal his qualities. He reveals his existence without his qualities in form and activities. That's all. Another is the sadhana. If we don't put effort into cultivating the Lord with his qualities, they will not manifest to us. So we have to have a desire and attraction for the Lord and his qualities. Plus, we have to be the proper sadhana so that we can develop the vision to see those particular qualities of the Lord. So if we worship the Lord without form, then we end up with a realization without form. If we worship the Lord with qualities, then that's the realization we get. The example is given, we mentioned previously about the insect. Gets trapped by the wasp and gets stuck in the hole and plugged up, and he's thinking of the wasp all the time, and then he comes out later, he becomes a wasp. Like that. So by constant thinking of a particular form, one can develop a similar form. That's the idea. Just as Bharat thought of a deer and he became a deer. So if we think of Brahman, then we end up as Brahman. No qualities, no form. If we think of the Supreme Lord, then we develop a similar form. Natural. So, of course, there is not only is that realization of Bhagavan complete, but there's an extra benefit. It's more blissful. That's the ultimate reward for the jiva. And one experiences much, much more bliss in realizing and serving the Supreme Lord than one does in merging in Brahman. So it's described by Jiva Goswami that essentially the bliss of the jiva who is liberated by jnana is the bliss of no suffering. And the bliss, of course, of not having to take any material bodies and getting material identities. So the bliss is we realize our identity. I'm not the material body, I am an Atma. That much. That's our bliss. But the bliss of bhakti is that we realize a relationship with the Lord and the response of the Lord to us and our activities, offerings to the Supreme Lord and his response, that gives rise to a different type of bliss. But it's not the bliss of absence of body and absence of suffering. It is a cultivation of a relationship that gives rise to bliss, which is not there in the impersonal realization. And that the bliss of Brahman can only be one. There's no variety there because there's no qualities at all. So we can say it's static. The bliss of bhakti is that the jiva does continual activities and gets continual response from the Lord. So there is continual variety in the experience of bhakti. The variety and the bliss. So that is manifested in different types of symptoms in the rasa. We have anubhavas and vyabhachari bhavas and sattvika bhavas, etc. And through that, we have a variegated manifestation of bliss, full of all tastes. So this is superior to the bliss of the mind. So there is a higher taste with that mixture of different elements in our relationship with the Supreme Lord. So therefore that is the complete realization. It's more blissful also. Not only is it more complete, but it is also more blissful for the jiva and for the Supreme Lord. So the nature of bhakti is that the Supreme Lord falls under the control of the jiva by prema. So the Supreme Lord does not remain separate, but actually carries out a very intimate relationship with the jiva, actually falls under his control and does what the jiva desires for him. So this is a very, not only a effective process, but a very powerful process by which there is submission of the Lord to the desires of the jiva. So this is the this is the process that is recommended in the Bhagavatam. So a first step is the understanding of the Atma as separate from the body. But as I mentioned, it's not a complete realization. It's the first step towards not understanding our relationship with the Supreme Lord. Of course, if we don't accept the existence of Atma, then we cannot establish a relationship with the Lord based on the material body. That is useless. But so this is important, but at the same time, we have to also understand the confidence related to the Lord.
There's no purpose or meaning in the material relationship what we have. Then the entire process of material life is done.
In one sense, yes. But people like it, so. They're attached to it, so that's the problem. They're attached to something with no meaning.
Atma requires a body to contact, because in this case, typically the sun's Atma is speaking. So can it think individually of the body, not in the body?
Oh yeah. Even without body, they can do that. I think in the case of, we have cases like clairvoyants and some who call back a dead spirit and they speak or whatever like that. So a ghost speaker sometimes like that, get messages. Huh? Yeah, Chota Haridas came as a subtle being like an angel. Generally they cannot do so. The Atma cannot do so at the present time because their spiritual body hasn't developed. In other words, like the jiva who becomes liberated in jnana. No more subtle body, no more gross body, but no spiritual body also. So he can't, no senses. So how can he speak? He just merges in Brahman.
So unless you develop the spiritual body, then you could not relate at all.
So it means that it requires metal body to contact.
Yeah, he brought him into the material body, but I said even without the material body, through the subtle body, one could also possibly communicate that way also. As we see in the material world, sometimes they contact posts or something like that, or messages from them or whatever. It depends. In the case of the near-death experiences, they do, but they come back to the body also, and they remember that experience. So it is possible also, if they go out completely, they could. But it would also depend on their condition of dying. If they die in a certain way, yes, they could. In other disturbing circumstances, they may not be able to perceive that at all. And they're due to fright or whatever. They may not be aware of anything. They're so confused. This verse describes what relatives of Vaishnava relationships, what if we are attached to devotees too much, and it's important to cultivate relationship with Vaishnavas. Well, we have the principle of sadhu sangha, and we have the other one, asa sangha chag. Give up material association and all material relationships, and, of course, develop a relationship with the Supreme Lord and with the devotees of the Lord. Satsanga. So satsanga is very important relationship with devotees because this is the source by which we get bhakti, and this is the source by which bhakti is cultivated. So that is very important. However, when we think of Vaishnavas, we're not thinking of a material body also. So if we're attached to the person's body, rather than the knowledge they give, then again, it's a material relationship. So the attachment to the sadhu is because of the knowledge they give. Well, all relationships are eternal in one sense because all jivas can relate with each other because they're all eternal, isn't it? So they can't have relationships eternally. There's no problem for that. But of course, in the spiritual world, the main relationship is with the Supreme Lord. Secondarily, the jiva's there. So in the spiritual world, we have relationships between devotees. Nanda's related to Yasoda, obviously. But their main relationship is with Krishna. It is possible to serve directly, but for the sadhana siddhas, generally we would say that they would go through other devotees. So they don't act independently. They're under the guidance of other nitya siddha jivas in the spiritual world. Well, actually, it is explained that describing the Paramatma as a Pradesh is not taken literally. This is explained in Brahma Sutras also. Because what if the the mouse is smaller than the Paramatma? So how are you going to fit inside? So it's proportionate to the body or whatever. That's one thing. So big body, little body, the Lord could adjust. So the Lord, of course, is all sizes. He's bigger than the whole universe. Is Paramatma, is Mahavishnu. It's another form of Paramatma. All the jivas and all the universes fit within his body. And of course, even as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, the whole universe arises from him also. So as Antaryami, yes, he's inside also. So he's not only the size realized in this particular size for meditation, but he also is smaller than the smallest. So he can... Yeah. Everywhere. Inside, outside, everywhere. Yeah.
To mostly to the size of the entity.
Yeah, yeah. And the body also. But of course he can adjust the size to anything because he's Supreme Lord. Well, the idea in the spiritual world, there is time, of course, is absent in the normal sense. And the past, present, future is quite different from our past, present, future, which is our past, present, future leads to karma and destruction, etc. They do have a sense of past and present and future in the spiritual world, but that is subservient to the pastimes only. So therefore, whatever memories they have are in relation only to that. Not beyond that. So it's called yoga maya. So there's no interference between the pastimes this way. Otherwise it could be some conflict. So for instance, the people in Mathura in the spiritual world. Did Krishna get to Mathura from Vrindavan? And when did he do it? Because technically he's always in Vrindavan and he's also always in Mathura. So how did he get to Mathura? Because there's an eternal Mathura and an eternal Dwarka in the spiritual world. So how did he get there? So there's some vague memory in the past. Yes, he came from there. But there's never a point in time when he actually came from Vraja to Mathura and from Mathura to Dwarka. Because they're all eternal. So in that sense, things are adjusted in terms of time and past and whatever. So any jiva who comes there, whatever, it's all adjusted according to the Supreme Lord. For others and for that jiva himself, so he feels that eternally. Well, there is a concept of spiritual bodies. In one commentary on the third canto verse, I think, where it describes the inhabitants of the spiritual world, there. Jiva Goswami and Priti Sandarva gives one commentary and says that one of these bodies is made into the body of a jiva who gets liberated and goes to the spiritual world. So he gets one of those bodies which is there. Of course, that's the next question about whose body was it? Was it just sitting there without a soul in it or something? Of course, we cannot say that soul and body are separate also, so... Somehow that body or that model becomes the body of the rupa or the vigraha of that form in the spiritual world. Specifically it says one among those forms, the Lord makes it with one of those forms, makes this the vigraha, spiritual vigraha of the jiva who gets liberated. So there's some idea of the form being there. Because the reason for that is nothing can be temporary in the spiritual world. So it has to be eternal. Everything's eternal. So therefore the spiritual body there is eternal also, I suppose, and somehow manifests at that time for that particular jiva.
Yes, if the Lord is in Goloka, he's also here. Can you say that the Atma is also having the portion there?
Well, you can't be simultaneous in both places because our philosophy says the jiva is in the material world. So, the Lord can be, but not the jiva. Nitya siddhas can be also by the arrangement of the Lord. And so we have, you know, Nanda and Soda and the gopis, they're all eternally in the spiritual world, they're also in the material world. By the will of the Lord, the nitya siddhas can do that, but not the jivas who are fallen in the material world. They don't have, you know, simultaneous positions in both places. Yeah. Well, Paramatma realization means we understand more than Brahman. In other words, we understand there's a form of the Lord and he's the controller of the material world and he is distinct from the jiva and he's distinct from matter, etc. If that goes further, of course, then one can develop bhakti. So we have Yoga Misra Bhakti as a result of that, described in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. However, it's described in Bhagavatam that the unfortunate yogi, he realizes Paramatma, but then he withdraws his attraction from that form and simply concentrates on merging. So, due to different type of association. Even the Paramatma Yogi develops the idea that he would rather merge in God than serve God. And therefore, he ends up with the same destination as the impersonalist merging into
it. Yeah.
Vishnu form.
He sees him directly inside his heart.
Yeah, can realize him. He must do that in order to get liberation. He takes the help of that Paramatma form. Because without the assistance of the Lord, one cannot get liberation, even the impersonalist. So if the impersonalist offends the Lord, he doesn't get the mercy, therefore he cannot get liberated. He has to stay in the material world.
So we can say that irrespective of the soul's substance or anything, the Lord is always present. Only he's not manifest to the particular soul.
And everywhere, all the time. But jivas cannot see in order to care.
శ్రీ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతంకి శిశువుల స్వామి మహారాజ్కి నిజమైన శ్రీమద్ భగవత్ సంవత్సరం ప్రభుపాదకి ప్రమణం.